Just a little comment about the borders of the land as they are presented in biblical history, and about the names of a lot of these cities and towns which you read of in Joshua, Judges, etc. God's original promise to Abraham was to give him the land from the Euphrates to the Brook of Egypt, which maybe wasn't the Nile, but was a brook that was a small river that was in what is now northern Egypt. And the northern boundaries were not so clear, but I think you could imagine the Euphrates sort of arcing around into what is now Turkey, southern Turkey, and then sort of downwards from there, with the Mediterranean being the border on the west. That was the original promise. But God recalculates his purpose with people. He then, when Israel came nearer to entering the land, he clearly gives them grants of land that are within Canaan. And although the 2.5 tribes wanted to settle east of Jordan, God did make it clear that, okay, he accepted that, but his intention really was that the Jordan was to be the boundary and they were to settle on the west side of that. Now, when they go into the land, then again, there appears to be a recalculation, because when you look at the southern border of Judah, it is effectively Beersheba. And so the phrase Dan to Beersheba, Dan in the north, which again is not near the Euphrates, it is somewhere south of the Euphrates, down to Beersheba in the south, which is also not the river of Egypt. And Beersheba is listed in Joshua 15 as one of the border towns. So God recalculated that intention for Israel. And I think you see how sensitive he is, that he saw they just did not have the faith, the hard work, the response to his love, the commitment, etc., to actually take that whole area. And so he reduced it to Canaan, and then when it actually came to settling it, he reduced it even further. And I think that shows this flexibility in God, which reflects his thirsting for relationship with us. His willingness to change the boundaries of various things in order to keep us within the program, because his program was eventually to eternally save Israel. Now, they effectively, most of them, pulled out of that program, but that was his intention. And he tells them that he wants them to not even mention the names of idols. But when you look at a huge amount of biblical data, which there is about the names of the towns within Israel, etc., you find that so many of them are still reflective of idolatry. You look at all the places that include Baal, Baalah, for example. So many of these places still have the old idol names or associations with idolatry, high place and things like that. You look up their meaning of those towns. It is normal when a country, an area is taken over by another nation or by another philosophy, that there is a renaming of towns and cities. I have lived most of my adult life in the former Soviet Union, and I've seen this happening, how when the Soviets, for example, took over Latvia and the Baltic states, everything was renamed, or a lot of things were renamed. You started having Karl Marx Prospect appearing, and all that sort of thing, Rosa Luxemburg Street. Things were renamed, and then when communism collapsed and the Baltics became independent, then there was again a renaming of those streets. Lenin Prospect became Independence Avenue and things like that. And so I'm disappointed, as I'm sure God was, that really Israel didn't do this. There were some places that were renamed, but there was a lot of them that weren't. And I think that that was reflective largely of their continued idolatry, because that is a big theme of the biblical record, and also of their refusal to be aware of the power of subliminal influence. And that is a takeaway lesson for us, because we are seeking to bring every thought into captivity to Christ, Paul says to the Corinthians. That is what we're after, to be spiritually minded. And that involves, I think, removing all subliminal influences that we can. And that has radical implication on what we watch, what we listen to. The words of songs can just keep on repeating in your mind. Maybe songs you listen to in your youth can keep on coming back to you in later life, decades later. If we want to have the mind of Christ, we've got to be aware of that. And things you have in your house, things you put on your wall, pictures, etc. What's the message? Is this provoking spiritual mindedness or not? And it's easy to think, well, yeah, I can watch that movie, I can read that novel or whatever, but it doesn't influence me. Yeah, it's just interesting. I'm not going to behave like that. And maybe you won't, but all the same, you can, by proxy, sort of vicariously, as it were, be involved in all the adultery and the murder and the drunkenness or whatever that's going on in the novel or the movie or whatever. And I just noticed this with Israel. When you look at these long lists of names of towns, etc., you think, well, what do these names mean? You just look them up in a concordance. It's quite easy to see what they mean. And so many of them are clearly unchanged and have still got the old associations with them. So that's a couple of thoughts which are a challenge to us. And the thing about the recalculation of the boundaries is, I think, an example of great encouragement to us, really, that although we may fail to live up to the ideal intentions that God has for us, he still thirsts for relationship with us. And especially when it comes to avoiding our tendency to judge other people, there may be folks who are not living as they should and are effectively spiritual failures in some parts of their lives, just as we are in some parts of ours. And yet God does have this way of, by all means, trying to recalculate the boundaries to keep people within. And that, I think, should be our challenge, as well as our personal comfort, when you really look at your own life and you see that you've not lived up to all the hopes that he had for you, that you missed a lot of potential, you missed a lot of opportunity, and yet God still will keep you within the system.